Be careful. Okay. Be careful. Now, of course, I don't know what you mean by this, whoever you are, but I'm going to take this as my my reflection. Carefulness. So one way I can understand that around feeling is that we do tend to see our more challenging feelings as dangerous. They might set us off balance. The kleshas, to use the terminology of the sutras, the kleshas, which means the afflictions, the Buddha talked about those in the early sutras as the very parts of our being that can keep us from inner peace. Now, even if we're not a Buddhist, so if we're a Buddhist, we may already have ideas about these more challenging feelings, that they are that which will prevent us from inner peace and therefore not our friends. In fact, in some sutras, there's this terminology of the poisons that's used to describe these kleshas. But even if we're not a Buddhist, as a human being, we know from our own life experience that these afflictions cause us issues, trouble, that they have been the chaos that invades our life at times and destabilizes our relationships, brings us suffering and causes problems for our life. So just from our life experience, we might feel we have to be careful around our negative emotions, careful around our more challenging feelings, and careful not to let them get out of hand, right? Careful not to let them get out of hand. And in one way, there's good reason for that, because they have gotten out of hand in our past. They have challenged us and made our life difficult. They have. But we also, with that narrative, develop a kind of aggression towards our own negative emotions. We are actually adding to the complexity of the emotion by resisting it, by othering it, by exiling that negative emotion. So one emotion, one aversion put on top of something that's already an emotion, yet another kind of resistance that crusts around those negative emotions. And sometimes they break out of that shell anyway, and they do their thing. Now, in later Buddhist traditions, the relationship towards emotions changed over time. In some forms of Buddhism, the emotions are actually seen as another form of wisdom, especially in the traditions of Himalayan Buddhism, where the poison is actually a little bit like, what is that kind of medicine where you take a little bit of poison to cure yourself? Homeopathy. Homeopathy. Oh, okay, vaccination. That actually would work. Yeah, yeah. But homeopathy I was thinking of. This notion that actually the poisons, if rightly met, can actually be the door to liberation. So, or put another way, the poisons themselves are just energy, just pure fuel. But how we frame them has been more of the issue. And how we story them and how our cognitive life interacts with these very natural human emotions becomes where the issues lie, not so much in the emotion itself. So if that's the case, then we do still need to be careful with our emotions, be careful, but not by othering them. Where we need to be careful is when we think that the outer world and its conditions are making us feel this way. The feeling itself actually has is just pure energy. It's just fuel. And so we can meet it that way in our practice. So be careful. Be careful. But not careful in the sense of stopping the emotion, but careful in the sense of believing that something outside of the self was the problem. We are always part of that problem. And if you're on a path of inner reflection or inner development, that's always going to be a piece of what we're working with. Be careful. Be careful. So another way to think of it, another way I like this, is what if we started to care about our emotions? What if we started to treat them in the same way that we would treat, say, a relative that is grouchy but lovable? What if we were full of care for the emotion? And it's really this perspective that is at the basis of this practice of befriending feelings. The theory behind befriending feelings is that what you struggle with actually grows stronger. So let's take anger. Let's take anger. You know, anger is one of the emotions that we most struggle with. We most feel like we have to be careful around. It's perhaps the emotion that causes us the most trouble when it gets out of hand. It causes us to say things that we wouldn't want to say if we were in a more equanimous state of mind. So anger is an example of an emotion that we really exile, we really other. But the more we other it, the more we suppress it, the more we try to avoid it, actually the stronger it gets. It doesn't just go away because we don't want it to be present. So the theory behind befriending feelings is that actually when you lean towards the anger, it doesn't mean indulge it, but when you lean towards it, it actually is given some space to relax. To relax. You know, anger and other emotions are actually there for a reason. They're not, it's not an accident. They're there to protect us in some way, or there to assist us in some way. They're human. So if we listen well enough to the anger, if we sit with the anger long enough, which means sitting with it again and again and again, befriending it again and again and again, it slowly will start to actually tell us what it's trying to say. It will show us its wisdom. That's enough. Ambivalence. Ambivalence. How many people struggle with ambivalence? I totally do. I would frame it as indecisiveness for myself. I'm like really indecisive. It's been a lifelong challenge. I'm one of those people that makes lists, you know, like on one side all the pros and on one side all the cons. And then I agonize for a week or two or three about the right decision. And then when I make it, I second guess. I don't know if you're that kind of person. I am. So ambivalence I relate to from that perspective. But ambivalence, you know, also has this notion, this feel of not feeling strongly one way or the other about something. Not caring one way or the other about something. And maybe we could say being without feeling, neutral, yeah, neutral for ambivalence. So what about a feeling that isn't strong, a feeling that's neutral? The Buddha talked about these sometimes about three kleshas, sometimes five. The root three kleshas that he talked about were aversion, desire, and ignorance. Let's say he called these the three poisons, and he talked about those as the cause of our suffering. And ambivalence is aligned maybe more with this third one of ignorance. That is not feeling strongly one way or the other, but also not being, we could say, maybe in a place of insight either, ambivalence. I'm struggling with what to do with ambivalence. I'm indecisive about it. I don't know what to do with ambivalence as a feeling. Who asked the question, if they don't mind? Yeah, what were you thinking?
What you said earlier, of like feeling like
Okay. Okay. Like indecisiveness, something like that. Okay. Not knowing for sure. Okay, okay, okay. Having one aspect of your life that you're not sure what you want to do about?
I'm trying to find the one word answer to that question.
Okay, that's good. You don't have to answer it. Okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 So that's, yeah, that's really interesting. Okay. So I can relate to what you're saying now more deeply. I think we all have parts of our life that are like that, where we feel like maybe something needs to be done, but we're not sure what, perhaps. Yeah. And not knowing also if it, is it the right time? And is it the right situation and the right time to make that decision or whatever it is? Oh, this is very familiar to everybody in this room, I would bet, I would guess, because all of our questions are actually everybody's questions. Yeah, so let's sit with that for a minute, because I would bet that almost everybody in this room can find that in their life, something that they are ambivalent about, something that we, let's close our eyes a minute and sit with that in your life, that you're not sure, should you do this now? Is it the right time? Or what should I do about this? Should I make that leap? Should I make that change? Should I make that commitment? That kind of thing that we all have, everyone. And let's notice where that feeling is living in your body. And come alongside it. Breathe and breathe space into that feeling, just in the present moment, not analyzing whether one should or shouldn't, but actually coming straight for the feeling and welcoming befriending, shaking hands with this feeling of ambivalence, uncertainty. And letting it be present just as it is without an answer. Just as it is. Just being in that place of not knowing. So there we go. So that's an application of the practice again with that particular feeling of ambivalence. So that's something you can take with you on the cushion. And you know, these things in particular, they tend to bother us because we feel like we should make a decision, perhaps. So they stick with us. These particular things, they stick with us. And you can actually take something like this and practice with it in that way again and again. And what happens if you do that is the feeling will slowly shift. What's actually shifting is how you are with the feeling. But as you're more welcoming with that feeling, like the feeling of ambivalence, the feeling of indecisiveness or of uncertainty, the willingness to just be there with it, One, it might actually show you what is the next thing, just by your willingness to be with it, just as it is. But two, the unpleasantness around it becomes much less intense. And you might even discover a way of being with that uncertainty in a way that you're happy that it's there. It becomes your guest and not your demon. Ambivalence. Okay. I can't read that one. It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. Could my feelings be wrong? Could your feelings be wrong? What's wrong? And what's right? Yeah, this is a very good question. Right and wrong are concepts. Right and wrong are concepts. So that does bring up this question of feeling versus what we think about what we feel. What we think about what we feel. And those are very, can be very, very different things. This also brings up this presence of the inner critic. We do tend to judge our feelings. And that can be a kind of a cycle around our relationship to feeling. That that is another cycle of heaping on top of the feeling itself, our inner critic. So in a practice of befriending feelings, like the one that we did in the very beginning of this evening together and that we did again a little bit later with ambivalence, is a practice of developing a kind or a compassionate gaze on our feelings, no matter what they are, actually, no matter how they manifest, a kind gaze on the feeling itself. And in order to develop a kind gaze on our feelings, we actually have to ask our inner critic to step back. We have to ask the part of ourselves that wants to judge the feeling as right or wrong to take a break so that the feeling can have space to just be what it is, to just be as it is, what it is. Your thoughts might be incorrect. Our thoughts might be incorrect, but our feelings are just what they are. They're often joined with our thoughts. And for example, I was actually thinking the other day about an incident that I had when my thoughts were incorrect, and I had a feeling that was a response to the thoughts. But the feeling was actually a wise feeling. So to give you an example, this is the example. Some roofers came to work on our house. And they had parked a truck outside. And the foreman was up on the roof. I could hear him sending one of the workers down to the truck. And the worker was down at the truck. And I heard him yell from the top of the roof. Oh, he was also angry, by the way. That's important to note. The foreman was having a spat with this worker, and he sent him down to the truck, and he yelled in a really angry voice, "Do you have a gun?" And the guy down at the truck said, "Yes, I've got a gun." Yeah, some of you know what was actually being said. I actually thought that, and I panicked. I thought about picking up the phone and calling 911. But as it turned out, he was talking about a nail gun, of course, right? He was not talking about a gun. He was talking about a nail gun. So my thought was incorrect. But my feeling was a pretty wise feeling, like, you know, do something, get, you know, a panic, either get out of the house or help this person, you know, help them not hurt each other. Not a bad feeling. Fear is a good response when you feel that danger is there. So I think that's true with many of our feelings, that the thoughts may be incorrect. The thought might be, my boss is a jerk. That might be the thought. That's definitely not a correct thought, because no one's a jerk. People are much more complicated than that, and they're much more layered than that, and they're also much better than that. You know, even the people that we most have negative thoughts about, from one point of view, they're a Buddha. They have wisdom. They have the potential to awaken just like everyone else. So the thought's incorrect. The feeling that comes with that is anger or aversion. Anger and aversion in and of itself, without the thought, is actually a protective mechanism. There's nothing inherently wrong with the feeling. And we've gotten the feelings and the thoughts very mixed, and we other those feelings when really we should be coming alongside them, befriending them, putting some space in there, and seeing what's there. Being with it, seeing what's there. If we fight with it, it grows stronger. When should you trust your feelings? It's almost the same question. Look, see how much we distrust them. We don't really fully trust them. So I'm going to answer this. You should always trust them. That doesn't mean you listen to their stories. But the feeling itself deserves our love and affection. There's nothing about it that doesn't deserve our love and affection. So, what do I mean by trust? I mean, we should befriend every feeling if we can. And we're not in the habit of that. We're not in the habit. We're in the habit of struggling with them, othering them, avoiding them, fighting with them, negotiating with them, everything but accepting them or just being with them. So it takes some training, but I think we should always befriend. Does anyone in here disagree with that? You might. I want to debate about it now. I want someone to pick a fight with me about feelings. Is there any feeling that we shouldn't befriend? Let's sit with that. Anxiety. Should we befriend anxiety? Anxiety. This is one of mine, my kleshas. This is universal, anxiety. But for some of us, it's more ascendant. For others, it's less so. I think for some of us, it's more ascendant. I would put myself as this is an ascendant one that I've struggled with my whole life. So I want to just say, you're not alone out there. Write this little tiny anxiety that you've written here. They wrote it pretty small. It's pretty big for many of us. Yeah, anxiety. the aversion and the attraction that we're avoiding is not the aversion and the attraction itself of that is the base aversion and attraction. It's the aversion to the parts of ourselves that are human that we don't like, and the attraction to the parts of ourselves that are human that we do like. And that actually, I believe that that's what the Buddha meant, was not that we flatten, not that we flatline our emotional life, but that we release our attraction to some, to our joys, and our aversion to our sorrows. Or put another way, we can't get rid of pain. We can't get rid of birth, aging, sickness, and death in this lifetime. We can't get rid of pain, but we can get rid of the resistance that we put on top of it. I think that, you know, in a way we are being a friend to our feeling. We're being a friend to our feeling. And one of my teachers, Sonia Rinpoche, who likes to teach a lot about feeling, these feeling, this kind of practice, said that we're actually developing like a teenage friend relationship. And the reason he said that is we don't want to be the parent. We've been the parent. We're usually the parent to our difficult emotions. And we're telling them what to do, and we're telling them what to think, and we're telling them where to go. We're being the parent. And so we're shifting the relationship with them and being like a teenage buddy that doesn't, won't tell it what to do, but actually just wants to be intimate in a friendly way with it. Yeah, nice. Yeah, a little imagery is fine. Okay. We're actually moving towards the end of our session. We're not quite there. We have about 5 minutes. And I think maybe the last five minutes, I'll just take any lingering questions that you have just as they come up. Yes?
What do you mean by othering it?
Othering it, I mean, our tendency to want to disassociate from whatever we're feeling, and to, especially negative feelings, and to essentially want to be rid of what we feel. And when we want to be rid of what we feel, we are divorcing ourselves from an association with it. I don't want that anger. I don't want that anxiety. I don't want, and we're actually creating more aversion when we say that, I don't want, or even with the feeling, I don't want. So the practice of befriending is letting go of that aversion and just being with what is. So not othering it, but actually seeing it as an extension, ultimately, as an extension of your Buddha nature, actually. Because whatever is arising is an extension of something very sacred that is your true self, your true anatta, your true selflessness, actually. And we don't see that yet in our emotion, but we could. If we didn't exile it, we could. Yeah. Yes.
Do you draw a distinction between ambivalence and doubt?
Yeah. I think I do. I mean, just personally, I think of ambivalence as being something like indecisiveness or uncertainty. No, I think of ambivalence as not being feeling strongly one way or the other, but doubt as being a little stronger, I guess, than ambivalence in terms of not knowing what's true. Maybe not knowing what's true. And they're both, you know, the Buddha classified ambivalence or classified doubt as neither positive nor negative, or actually as both. It could be both. It could be either. And I think that's a really interesting classification, which means that we can have doubt that afflicts us, and we can have doubt that liberates us. That our doubt is needed so that we'll actually look deeply into things. We need doubt, right? And we actually should be questioning everything. And in fact, many of you didn't get your questions asked, so keep that with you as an open koan, speaking of the liberating power of doubt, and hold it with you, even though we didn't get to it tonight. That's even better, maybe, that you don't have the answered question. There's a power to that, so thank you. Thank you all so much. It was really nice to spend the evening with you. And may you be well.